is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if you want to advertise with us or you have questions you want us to answer in the show, make sure you email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, so stuff's happening today. This is crazy.
You got to be alert on draft week. There's
is this no the craziest NBA offseason day since the DeAndre Jordan emoji thing?
Yeah, it's up there. David Griffin out in Cleveland as their general manager. Their best three-year run in franchise history. Their lone championship. And that news comes just hours after we'd heard that David Griffin was trying to put together a blockbuster trade to acquire the one and only Jimmy Butler, three-time All-Star of the Chicago Bulls, who minutes earlier had been tied to trade talks with none other than Tom Thibodeau, leader of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and who else was Jimmy thrown in there with the Phoenix Suns? Wild afternoon in the NBA.
And then, of course, the Boston Celtics loom, too, because of the trade that they did with the Sixers, where they, you know, they moved back from the first pick to the third pick in this week's draft, and they got another future pick with some weird protections on it that could either be the Lakers pick or the Kings pick in 2019, but isn't going to be the number one pick no matter what.
Very true. We do know at this point in time, Jimmy Butler is a Chicago Bull as of Monday evening. I'd expect him to be a Chicago Bull for certain through Thursday evening. A lot of draft chatter here. I'm assuming the Wolves and Suns trade talk, and even maybe, I don't know, this Cavaliers feels a little more real because it felt like maybe David Griffin was making a last-ditch effort to show that he was trying to acquire another star to put by LeBron before negotiations broke down with Dan Gilbert. Like, I don't know how Griffin was, like, handling his Monday where he's trying to sign a long-term contract to himself, and in the other breath, as he leaves the room to take a call or go grab lunch, he's trying to acquire Jimmy Butler from the Bulls. Like, that feels like maybe more of an end game for David Griffin and the Cavs to have done that, so I could see them calling the Bulls on that front. The Suns and Timberwolves stuff, I think you mentioned this too, maybe feels like a little bluster to drive the Celtics price up. And we're going to jump around everywhere in this podcast because this is the NBA at its wildest. Like, everything just kind of melds together, you know what I mean? But that's kind of the initial hot take read I have on.
So where do you want to start? Let's start with the Cavs.
Start with the Cavs.
I mean, the obvious thing here is that if there's going to be a trade where Jimmy Butler ends up going to the Cavs, it has to be a multiple-team trade where a third team takes Kevin Love and then gives the Bulls whatever, like, draft picks and young players. Because if you're the Bulls, if you're going to trade Jimmy Butler,
you don't want Kevin Love.
You don't want Kevin Love. You want picks. You want good young players. Kevin Love doesn't really move the needle for you. It's basically just a lateral move.
Yeah, if you trade Jimmy Butler, you're fully committed to a rebuild. And I know the Bulls still don't control Dwayne Wade's player option choice at $23.8 million for 17-18, and he can still do whatever he wants. But once you trade Butler, if you do, full rebuild, and that means you obviously want young guys. Because, I mean, if you're just going to trade Jimmy for other NBA pieces, like, he's under a value contract for two more years at, what, $17, $18, $19 million in that case. Like, the best way to build a winner in the next 2 years is to just build around an underpriced superstar. And Jimmy Butler's not a superstar, but he's an underpriced star, correct? Is that a fair way to put it? So, yes, as you point out, as we all point out here, logic dictates that if the Bulls are going to trade Jimmy Butler, want a bunch of young guys and draft pick assets. So, the Celtics, you mentioned the Cavs. I guess start with the Cavs. The Suns would be a logical third team in that, as Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune has, I believe, reported, watch out for the Suns, keep a name and interest on them. Because they have some young guys and could be facilitated into being a third team in a deal with the Cavs. But now the Cavs don't have a GM, so it doesn't seem like that is going to happen.
Right, and then at the same time as all this is going on, you know, the Cavs were also apparently talking with the Pacers about Paul George, who told them over the weekend that he wants to leave and he wants to sign with the Lakers, and so now other teams are calling him about a rental, and so the Cavs were kind of in on that. I can't really see that happening now, because, I mean, if you're the Pacers, you don't really want Kevin Love either.
No, but does Paul George news coming that he will leave Indiana and almost certainly go to the Lakers in summer 2018, doesn't that help Jimmy Butler's value? Because now, like, in the eyes of the other 28 teams in the league that aren't the Bulls and the Lakers, like that's one superstar. Jimmy moves up one notch on the superstar, I should say star available list. Guys that aren't superstars, but everyone's wanting to add stars. He moves up one notch, doesn't he? One ring on the ladder?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. You can look at it and say this is a safer bet because he's under contract for two more years and he hasn't specified this is the team I'm going to leave for in free agency. So that's the way you could look at it and say it benefits the Bulls with the Jimmy Butler trade market. On the other hand, teams could look at it and say, you know, since the Pacers have no leverage, you know, Paul George is going to be a rental, and we are going to take the gamble that we can convince him that he wants to stay with us, and so we'll have to give up less because he's already made it clear he wants to go to the Lakers. So
if you can give up far less for Paul George, I understand that teams might be willing to just give up one good asset, instead of previously knowing they'd have to give, like, three good assets up for George to lock him under long-term control, assuming he'd, like, when the Celtics were previously talking about acquiring Paul George, they were doing it on the impression that they would get him for, like, four more years after trading for him. You know what I mean? But now, the Celtics, like, say hypothetically they still wanted Paul George for a year, which I don't see any of that happening now, but they're not going to give up hardly anything because they think he's going to leave for L.A. So I get that maybe in the sense, but, like, Jimmy might be with DeMarcus Cousins having gone from the Kings to the Pelicans, now Paul George seemingly picking his next destination and announcing it via leaked media reports. Is Jimmy the most, like, attainable star for other NBA teams right now?
I mean, I would say he probably is, just because, like, Anthony Davis isn't going to get traded anytime soon.
No.
Like, I can't really see who else is out there that's at that level, that's, like, at that all-NBA level. You know, Carmelo Anthony's a little bit past his prime, and he also has that no-trade clause that he would only waive for a couple of teams. So I really just don't see another star out there.
Yeah. We got to get to the good stuff, though. Like, fun with hypotheticals. Like, this is why people tune in. You know what I mean? Phoenix Suns. Let's say there remains some interest on their part in Jimmy Butler. If there remains interest on their part in being a third team in a Jimmy Butler trade, even if they don't get him. Any young players on the Suns make sense for the Bulls?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to assume that Devin Booker is off the table.
I would definitely assume so. I would not in a million years as a Phoenix Suns trade Devin Booker for anyone that is 5 years older than him. You know what I mean? 6 years older than him. Maybe Anthony Davis isn't that much older than Devin Booker, but Jimmy Butler is, what, Booker's probably like 21, something in that range. And Jimmy Butler's going on 28 this season. You don't do that. So, yeah, off the table.
So then I think you would probably look at maybe Eric Bledsoe as a point guard for salary filler. I know he's a little bit older. It doesn't fit a rebuilding timeline. But he was playing really well last year before they shut him down with basically, they basically said, we're not going to play him anymore because we're trying to get a better draft pick. So for once he was healthy, so they could play, you know, they could take him, and if he plays well in the first part of the season, then if another good team needs a point guard, they could flip him later on. But then as far as all, you know, you could get the number four pick from this year's draft.
That which would be Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum, probably.
Or De'Aaron Fox.
The opportunity to draft one of those three, and you'd have probably at least two of those choices, right?
Right, and then, you know, they have a couple of other young guys like Marquise Chris, Dragon Bender, depending on how you feel about any of those guys.
TJ Warren's a small forward who isn't above average, but he's a capable, like, throwing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you just need a younger guy, like, you can get role players in this deal, too. Like, the Bulls need a lot of players, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they need a lot of players who can be filled dependable roles. Like, I think the Suns have enough throwing there. Like, a backup point guard like Tyler Ulis could even be thrown into the deal. In that, if you're talking about after the main guys at the fringes, the Suns do have a lot of players in excess that they could part with.
They have some other picks, too. Like, they have a couple of Miami picks that they have left over from the Dragic trade. They have a couple of second-rounders from other teams. I still like the Celtics' potential package the best.
Certainly.
if they were to actually get serious about it. And that would include the number three pick this year and the Brooklyn pick from next year and maybe this Lakers-Kings pick that they got and or Jaylen Brown plus whatever salary filler. To me, absolutely.
You just threw in a ton of assets.
Because they're getting Jimmy Butler under a below market contract for two more years at age 28. That you have to give... I don't get where people are talking about, like, oh, well, we have to protect all these assets. Like, you know, getting these assets that are going to be valuable in the future is the most important thing. You get these assets to trade for somebody like Jimmy Butler.
Sean is on a Danny Ainge rant.
I feel like in 2 years we're gonna see like Anthony Davis, like, you know, the Pelicans are gonna realize this isn't gonna go anywhere. They're gonna start shopping around Anthony Davis, and Danny Ainge gonna be like, no, we can't give up Terry Rozier and like next year's protected Clippers pick. That's too many assets to give up. Like, he's so obsessed with his assets, and like the Celtics fans and like Celtics like people around the Celtics are so brainwashed by this.
They fully believe in Danny Ainge. They fully believe.
They're so brainwashed by this whole, like, oh no, we're getting assets. I mean, we're getting all these assets. We have these protected picks that are going to turn into something down the line. And it's like, okay, well, you could have Jimmy Butler right now. You hope that maybe at some point one of these guys is going to turn into a player as good as Jimmy Butler is.
I completely disagree with you in the Danny Ainge criticism. He just built a 53-win. Top seed in the Eastern Conference. I know a lot of the Eastern Conference was could be considered garbage, many people would say. But he built a 53-win team, has the number one pick that he just traded for the number three overall pick, to acquire a pick next year that could conceivably be in the top four or five. He has cap space this summer to go chase Gordon Hayward. And so far, has he made any bad trades? He got Isaiah Thomas for like 12 cents on the dollar, it feels like, or something. He has 7 first-round draft picks in the next 3 years. Why is anybody criticizing anything he does when he's taking a conservative approach on parting with major assets to acquire a superstar? Like, what superstar should be on his roster right now, or what superstar should be on his roster 4 or 5 days from now, is the question.
Well, my thing is, it's more like I'm
mad at the reaction of the fans more than Danny Ainge. I think
it's not just from Danny Ainge though. It's from like every single time he won't do a trade when there's talk that like, oh, maybe he could have gotten Jimmy Butler.
What trade should he have done? Butler?
I mean, if all it took last summer was like last year's number three pick and like Jay Crowder, it was I think all that was reported that it was the package. Like, why would you not do that?
Yeah, in hindsight. But I don't know that the Bulls were fully in on that. Okay, wait. Last summer, it would have been parting... I think Danny Ainge might tell us someday, too, what was actually on the table in that deal.
Well, see, that's the other thing. Is
especially if he's got all the swagger and wins games. That actually might be fun.
Well, that's the thing. Every single one of these times he doesn't trade for somebody, he's like, well, you know, we were really close to doing something. We just, like, he makes it look like, hey, you know, we really were close to... Like, it's...
If the Bulls were ready to push the go button on the number three overall pick, Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart for Jimmy Butler, and were asking for nothing else, that's a big misstep in hindsight by Danny Ainge. Correct criticism from you. I don't know that the Bulls were willing to press go on that deal, though. Everything that's been reported, everything you hear, every radio hit you hear a Bulls writer do, every single comment and quote that leaks out of Boston and from their writers in the past year, I don't know that that three-asset trade was on the table for Jimmy Butler. The Bulls wanted more, as they should have. You know what I mean? Like, the Bulls made the right play, whatever happened last year. Anytime you have an all-star that then can ascend to all-NBA status, like, you correctly bet. I'm not saying they made necessarily the best chance for their future rebuild, but when it comes to getting fair value for Jimmy Butler, they made the correct play on the no-go on a trade that would have been 60, 65 cents on the dollar maybe for Jimmy Butler. Like, I respect the hell out of Jay Crowder's game. I think the more you watch him and you look at some of these playoff series, you realize that he doesn't have that next gear and that really high-level play in a way that maybe you overvalue Jay Crowder in the regular season because he goes so hard and he is such a consistent defensive force every night and you love his contract. But again, like, you go back and watch Cavs, Warriors in the NBA Finals and you see this Warriors team, like, you realize the talent you gotta have. And that's where you're coming from with the high-end talent acquisition and the criticism of Danny Ainge for for going.
I just want to be clear about something. I don't think Danny Ainge is a bad GM. I think he's a great GM. I think he's done a great job. I think my thing is more, you know, this combined with, you know, the Sam Hinkie won because of the trade yesterday with the Sixers, and it's like you know, just like, you know, kind of that general reaction, like all the Sixers fans today were doing like the retweet Armageddon of everybody who ever criticized anything Sam Hinkie ever did, and it's like
shout out to Sixers
fans. and it's like at a certain point you have to turn these assets into actual players that are going to help you win,
and Sam Hinkie did that.
Do we know that Markelle Fultz is going to be good?
I think we know.
I think he's going to be good, but do we know? It's not like this is like LeBron that they acquired with this trade.
No, but he is about as heralded as any number one overall prospect has been since. I mean, he's up there, not even close to LeBron or anything like that. Not generational talent. But people love him.
I just think it's funny that this is what you're declaring victory on. Win 25 games in a season before you declare that the process worked.
That is a great point, but Sixers gotta have, like, they gotta have a day to gloat. Like, you can't go, like, 9 straight years and not gloat at some point. So, like, I realize it's still all hope and theoretical and nothing's been proven on the court for them, but they gotta take their day to gloat. And I do feel like this vindicates Sam Hinkie in a lot of ways. Because, I mean, that trade with the Kings, the trade with the three-teamer in which they got the Lakers pick, that was not directly involved with the Lakers, but the three-teamer, that was Bucks and Suns, I believe. That trade in the where he fleeced the Kings, all of this trust the process, all of this asset accumulation, all led to the opportunity to get the guy they want. And that's Markelle Fultz. Like, there's people. This trade's fascinating. Okay, this Sixers-Celtics swap, because there's criticism you can levy from both sides, right? Like, the Celtics are betting that either the Sixers, the Kings, or the Lakers will still be really bad in 1 or 2 years. Like, you know what I'm saying? And if one of those teams is still really bad, then the Celtics are basically getting a top 5, maybe top 7 pick if it's the Kings, you know, in 2 years and 19 and they're the 6th or 7th worst team. Something like that. Like, they're betting on getting a top 5 or 7 pick to move back 2 slots and one of these teams still being really bad. So from that perspective, if it doesn't happen, like, let's say they, for some reason, like, these teams are borderline 8 seed, you know what I mean? And the way the pick protections, and like, we could waste so much time explaining the pick protections, but it's conceivable that they end up with like the number 16 pick and a garbage first rounder that is in a bad draft or something. Then you criticize the Celtics, right? But from the 76ers point of view too, they could be giving up a really high pick for Markelle Fultz when Markelle Fultz could end up being equally as talented and good in the NBA as Josh Jackson or even worse. You know what I mean?
I like this more for the Sixers, I think, than I do for the Celts, because the thing that the Celtics are gambling on.
Hinkie vindicated them.
I never said it was a bad move for the Sixers.
No.
I just think the reaction is so over the top.
The reaction is over the top, but this is the over the top reaction I think I enjoy in the NBA. Is a trade of big consequence being completed before these guys are proven in the NBA, but two franchises and two general managers, front offices, really sticking their necks out there. And, like, that's the time. I like this more than the over-the-top trade rumor talk among fans. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, this Jimmy Butler stuff is still, again, just in theory, him getting traded. And we have so many over-the-top reactions, you know? Like, go out and have your over-the-top reaction at this point now that a deal of this big has been done. Like, this is cool stuff. Because it could define two franchises. And two franchises that have built up to this point for so long.
The Celtics are gambling that there's not that much of a difference between Markelle Fultz and whoever they're going to take at number 3. You know, it could be Josh Jackson, could be Jason Tatum, could be whoever. But, like, basically, if Markelle Fultz, like, comes out and is, like, a multiple-time All-Star and, like, wins Rookie of the Year, then, like, this trade's not going to look great for them.
Absolutely.
Except that they got this other pick, but it's, like, this other pick that they get is only worthwhile, really, I feel like, if they can use it to trade for somebody else. But they're like at this point where like they get these picks that they're using, that they are supposedly like the whole point of having all these picks is we're going to use them to trade for a star. And then when a star is semi-available, like Jimmy Butler, they're like, oh, well, no, we can't give up any of our assets.
My criticism of them is that they talk about acquiring a star, and then all signs and believers point to Markelle Fultz being that star, and then they pass on the opportunity to draft him. Like, here's my criticism. I don't think you're winning an NBA title. Honestly, this is... I'm on the boat. I don't think you're winning an NBA title with Isaiah Thomas as your point guard. You got to... That's so much... That's such a defensive deficiency, and a guy who has to have, for long stretches, the ball in his hands to be a difference maker. And you had the guy that could replace him. Especially, how are you going to win an NBA championship with Isaiah Thomas as your point guard if you have to pony up $205 million for him? Is it conceivable he gets even more than that, too?
He could qualify, whatever the cap is next year, he could qualify for the Supermax.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you kind of... That's lessening your flexibility in a huge manner to do that. And I don't think you're winning an NBA title with a 5'8" point guard. And that sounds bad, and Isaiah Thomas has gone out there and proved so much, and he was so brilliant this year, and he deserves all those accolades, but he's not a two-way force, and you got to get two-way players. You saw the Warriors. I mean, all those, Steph Curry is not, but every single other one of them is a two-way beast, offensively and defensively. I mean, absolute brilliant defensive players. Now, sometimes they're not always engaged defensively, but Kevin Durant played heck of good defense. I mean, he can play elite defense and serve, maybe not as a traditional rim protector, but still serve as a new age rim deterrent. Rim protecting
sure.
Deterrent.
I like that.
Something along those lines. Really, really wants to. And look, he's embraced that, especially in the postseason these last 2 years. And then the Celtics have a chance to go get a guy many think can be a superstar and be a game-changing two-way player in Markelle Fultz, and they pass on it. That's my criticism. But if you're... personnel department and talent evaluation is that Josh Jackson is that guy who's going to be a multi-time all-star and just be an absolute terror and menace two ways and be awesome defensively, and you say, I'll figure out the point guard situation later with Isaiah and we'll address that when we get there, I'm okay with that. You know, if you're not as high on Markelle Fultz as others are because you trust your personnel department and talent evaluators, I'm okay with that. But if you evaluated Markelle Fultz as that superstar and then you just traded down because you're like, you know, we got to get some more assets, maybe get a guy in a trade, then I have big criticism. But I think the Celtics, from all indications, have kind of valued those top three guys, maybe even four guys, close to equally. But we got to do hypothetical Bulls-Celtics trades if it's still in play Thursday night.
So here's my here's what I would. I mean, I honestly think like I get where the Celtics are like, oh well, you know, we have these assets we want to keep. But okay, so here's the thing, like I think I read like that if the Celtics want to get Jimmy Butler and have max cap space this summer to go sign somebody like Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin or whoever, they have to shed about $14 million of salary.
Okay.
So they could do that by including Jay Crowder, who is going to be expendable if they have Jimmy Butler and Gordon Hayward anyway.
Absolutely.
And then Tyler Zeller, and he's making like $6 million. And then Tyler Zeller, who's non-guaranteed $8 million next year, so the Bulls could just waive him and create more cap space. So you do those two.
Those are two pieces of the trade that got to be in it.
Those
two
pieces
the good stuff.
As salary. You know, with the Bulls, I don't even think the Bulls would keep Crowder. You could just flip him to like a good team that could
for
actually use
pick.
Him for like another pick or something.
Yeah.
And then I would need number three and the Nets pick.
The Nets 2018.
Unprotected.
First rounder unprotected. What if Danny Ainge says, number one overall protected, it's yours unless it's the number one pick?
Then no deal.
No deal? See, that's not a deal breaker for me. One protection on it isn't a deal breaker.
No, because the whole point of getting that pick is it could be the number one pick. That's the whole point of these Brooklyn picks being so valuable.
Well, the 2018 draft is considered to have three or four studs in it, of which I haven't done great research yet whatsoever at all.
Okay, but what if they like one more than the other and that one is the guy that goes one overall? Then you don't get the guy that you think you can rebuild with.
Well, you got to look at it and say, are any of these three or four, can I rebuild with them?
So, I just feel like if you're giving up a pick, I mean, if you're giving up a player like Jimmy Butler, the picks you get back have to be
certainty.
Unprotected.
You got to plan ahead. This is my
And the other thing is, let's say they don't get that pick. Let's say, well, the thing is, they don't have next year's. Like, if like this year, I think the contingency, the way they were going to be able to do it was like, you know, this year, you know, maybe we'll protect it this year, and then if you don't get it this year, then you get it next year. The Celtics don't have any other Nets picks after next year. So if they say it's top one protected or top two protected, and then that pick goes in the top two, then there's no more pick.
Yeah, so let's string this out a tad more, though. So you're saying number three pick, let's just plug Josh Jackson in there. So we have a player to set. So you're saying Josh Jackson, the Nets' unprotected pick in 2018, which we expect the Nets to be a bottom 10 NBA team, probably.
The Nets are still going to be pretty bad.
We don't expect them to probably be the worst team.
They're still going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. There was some hope for them late in the season, remember? Like, they played 500 ball for a few weeks or whatever.
Yeah, as soon as Jeremy Lin came back.
Before they benched everyone on the last night of the season and tanked so the Bulls could make the playoffs.
Yeah, as soon as Jeremy Lin came back.
Yeah, there you go. So probably a top 7-8 pick from the Nets next year in a draft that I don't know much about the 2018 draft next year other than three or four really good studs and highly regarded prospects, but that seems like a good start for giving the draft a little bit of depth, and obviously so much can play out. And then what else? You would say Jay Crowder, but you're just counting that as maybe a mid-first round pick?
Yeah, I would just flip Crowder for another pick.
So you're looking, you want a top three pick, a top seven pick in 2018, and then a mid-first rounder almost is what you're valuing Jimmy Butler at. And I think that's ballpark. You haven't said throw Jaylen Brown in there yet. Are you assuming that the Celtics just wouldn't do that too and have the Nets pick?
I think the Celtics value Jaylen Brown too highly. And this would also be a way for them to save face for giving up all these picks. Because then they could say, hey, you know, we went all in because now we have Jimmy Butler, we've got Al Horford, we got Isaiah Thomas, and then let's say they sign Blake Griffin. We've got these, you know, these four high-paid all-stars. But hey, we still have Jaylen Brown in his rookie contract. He's a guy that we like for the future. They're bringing that Zizic guy over from Croatia that they drafted last year. I think they're going to bring Yabusele over too. Like, they still have young guys.
The one thing too with the Celtics, look, the Bulls have done a really poor job. We're now 2 years into Jimmy Butler's bargain contract.
Yes.
Right? Out of four that they're going to get, a five-year max deal, and he'll certainly opt out of that final year because he'll be able to get a lot more than the $19 million or whatnot. They've done a poor job of building a team around him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo didn't maximize Jimmy Butler's strengths. The Celtics and Danny Ainge have a better track record here of building a team. You know what I mean? Even when they were really bad and in Brad Stevens' early years, they at least felt like they had a roster that kind of fit together. You know what I mean? They weren't talented yet. They weren't developed or matured, but it seemed to be a little bit more well put together. Like, Danny Ainge operating with a star on a $17, $18 million contract for 2 years, that gives him a lot of flexibility to still fill in around the edges, make trades elsewhere or whatever. And I know you throw Gordon Hayward in there, then your flexibility's gone. But, like, let's just... Danny Ainge can do a lot with a star on a value deal. You know what I mean? More than the Bulls front office can do. I think we can say that is a fact right now, unless something drastically changes on the Bulls front office and in the next, I guess, 2 weeks here or whatever.
David Griffin's available now.
Leading into free agency. And yeah, I mean, we can get into that too. Should the Bulls call David Griffin? I say yes.
Does he have any Ames, Iowa connections that we don't know about?
I don't know. But if I am Michael Reinsdorf, I'm putting a call in to David Griffin and saying, hey, what position would you have to have? And how much money would it take for you to consider the Bulls? Because let's just be clear here. This is like when Joe Maddon became available for the Cubs. We're talking about a guy who has had his hands tied for long, long stretches by the Cavs. And I know the most elementary response is going to be, well, he had LeBron James. It can't be that hard to build a champion. I mean, he pulled a rabbit out of his hat like 10 times in acquiring guys around the roster. I know Dan Gilbert is like millions of dollars into the luxury tax to the point where I don't know if he can like afford his fourth yacht. You know what I mean? But every time LeBron went out there and said, we need this done. We need this here. We need to get something done. David Griffin got it done. I mean, from the start, he went out and got Kevin Love for Andrew Wiggins. And say what you want, but the Cavs They probably don't win the title without Kevin Love.
Absolutely.
In 2016. He made the moves he had to. Kyle Korver, he got Timofey Mozgov the first year when it looked like it was going to maybe be a little iffy if they'd make the finals. They needed someone that could anchor their defense.
J.R. Smith they got.
He got J.R. Smith, who was instrumental. Got Kyle Korver this year to give him a chance. If Korver knocks down, I mean, he's a 40-something percent three-point shooter, one of the best in NBA history. If he knocks down that corner three in game three, it's conceivable it's a 2-2 series. You know what I mean? And who knows what happens then. The Warriors are clearly the better team, but I think David Griffin gave it the best run they could with the Cavs. They've won 50 or more games three straight years, went to finals three straight years, brought Cleveland its lone championship. This is a guy who helped build the Suns into a contender. I mean, he started with the Suns as an intern. I think he went to Arizona State, worked his way up. He was instrumental in behind the scenes, kind of lesser role as an assistant GM in the early 2000s when the Suns build up the 7 seconds or less. But the Suns, what year? Oh, 2010?
Went to the Western Conference Finals.
With a team that probably shouldn't have gone to the Western Conference Finals, you could argue, that year. And he was the GM that helped build that team. So look, he's really established. And that's not me writing a column and headline that says Bulls need to fire Gar Foreman. That's just a call when someone that good is made available and you're a team like the Bulls that has big market resources, you got to make that phone call. I think you have to make it. I don't know if he wants to work in the NBA next year. Yeah, like this. I mean, we just had a lot of positions filled. What, the Magic and Hawks jobs that
and
he was
Bucks.
Previous Bucks filled. That he was previously tied to the first two, right? Hawks and Magic. And then, obviously, it doesn't seem like Dan Gilbert did him any favors here by not paying him and having these jobs be filled. But there's a lot of teams in the NBA. Anyone with bad management that has a checkered history needs to be calling David Griffin and saying, hey, like, are you interested? You know what I mean?
If James Dolan wants to gain back a lot of goodwill with his fans, he could maybe get Phil out of there and try to get David Griffin in there too and say, hey, your next challenge will be to make the Knicks great again.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a guy that was gifted with a lot of money here from Dan Gilbert, the willingness to spend big money. And look, LeBron went back to Cleveland because he was born in Akron. Right? But Griffin still had a good relationship. He was one of the few people in the Cavs organization that kind of had a good relationship with him, right? Like, after Gilbert burned him with the letter upon him, the decision leaving for Miami. So those are calls you need to make. Doesn't ever need to leak. Never needs to leak. But Michael Reinsdorf, you need to make that call. Like, that's due diligence. That's Theo Epstein calling Joe Maddon the second he's a free agent, you know? That's what you do. That's what you do when really established good guys become available to make your organization better in any regard and capacity that you can.
You want to talk about this Iguodala stuff quickly?
Fill them in. Fill
so,
the people in.
Shams Charania from The Vertical reported this morning that the Andre Iguodala is going to consider other offers before it, you know, become, you know, before he makes his decision about whether he's going to go back to the Warriors, see if other teams have money. And Shams listed a bunch of teams that are going to pursue him, and he listed the Bulls as one of the teams.
Alternate headline. Bulls considering making bullsiest move they could possibly make this offseason.
It would be a pretty bullsy move for a guy who's 33 and can't shoot and is past his prime to be their big free agent target if they have to pay him $18 million a year.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why this is, but I just have this gut feeling that the role Andre Iguodala could potentially play for the Bulls wouldn't be quite as smooth as the one he played with the Warriors. I just don't think it would go quite as seamless.
Are you trying to say that the Warriors have better talent around him that complements his skill set, that he can just kind of fill in and do the things he does well?
Yeah. You know, being the fifth guy on a historic, legendary death lineup and a part of the Hamptons Five, it's a little different from needing to be the primary playmaker when Jimmy Butler gets tired for a few minutes, I think. And let's just say Paul Zipser, Jaren Grant, and Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis don't contort a defense and strike fear in opponents quite the same way Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson
do. My counterpoint to that is Paul Zipser hit a game winner against the Warriors earlier this season.
Game winner or go-ahead shot?
Dagger.
Dagger, not game winner, dagger. Actually, dagger's better, right?
Yeah.
Dagger sounds even better.
Yeah. It sounds scary.
That was the right wing shot, and then he got really excited. Late shot clock, right? Really late shot. Definitely a dagger. So there you go. There's one point on the ledger for the Bulls attracting a warrior.
So here's
gonna debunk this now.
I'm gonna debunk this. So first of all, it's not gonna be very easy for the Bulls to get a lot of cap space. One of two things have to happen. Assuming Dwayne Wade opts in, we still think Dwayne Wade is gonna opt in.
Yep.
They'd either have to waive Rondo and keep all their, you know, and keep Mirotić and Felicio's cap holds. And they've been clear they want to re-sign both of those guys. So they'd have to let those two young guys that they have go, that they want to keep, so that they can overpay for Andre Iguodala. They'd have about $18 million for cap space. If they kept Rondo, they could renounce all of their cap hold and waive Isaiah Cannon. And by all their cap holds for restricted guys, I mean Mirotić, Felicio, LaVerne, and Michael Carter-Williams. The latter two of whom I think aren't going to be back regardless. But, you know, Felicio and Mirotić, they want back. If they do all that, they'd have about $20 million in cap space.
Yeah.
So that would be enough to probably get Iguodala, but like...
This doesn't add up.
That's not the move.
They keep preaching summer 2018 roster flexibility because Rondo and Wade will come off the books. And Iguodala is going to want more than a one-year deal, right? So you're tying yourself up if you give him a two- or three-year deal at $18 million a year. And I wouldn't give him a three-year deal at $18 million. But like he'll want at least a two-year deal. And I think Shams dropped, close to $20 million figure? Like, you're tying up $20 million for next summer. That makes no sense.
So two other things happened relating to Iguodala today that make me think that this isn't going to happen. One is that Chris Haynes at ESPN reported that he's going to opt out, that Durant's going to opt out and just re-sign for a little bit less than the max so they can keep his bird rights and re-sign him over the cap. The other thing that happened is that Andre Iguodala and Steph Curry announced that they're starting a tech summit for players where they're going to be able to like exchange ideas with Silicon Valley people.
Based out of San Francisco.
That doesn't sound like somebody who's going to leave the Bay Area anytime soon.
Yeah, that to me screams leverage play agent.
His agent threw this out there to make it look like other teams are going to pay him just to make sure
so
the Warriors don't
lowball. So we just want you to brace for the possibility, but by no means expect Andre Iguodala.
You're going to hear a lot of stuff over the next couple of weeks about, oh, well, the Bulls are interested in this free agent or that free agent. That stuff is almost always leaked by the player's agent to try to drive up a...
But Bulls, Timberwolves, trade talks, where is that getting leaked from, and do you need to debunk that one?
I know exactly where that's getting leaked from. Not from the Bulls' side.
Minnesota's end? Wait, is Tibbs... Do you think Tibbs is just kind of screwing with the Bulls? Like, he's bored on a Monday afternoon a few days before the draft and wants to screw with them?
The Woj report was that they made preliminary contact. What I think that was...
Is that the number 10 ranking member in the Wolves organization contacting the number 10 ranking member in the Bulls organization?
No, I don't think that's what that was. I think what it was is probably the exact same thing as it was last year. It was a very short, you know, it's a very short conversation. Tibbs would call them and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in trading for... Because I think he really does want Jimmy because, you know, he helped develop him. He wants, you know, he still has a lot of attachment to him. Right, he wants to win.
Did he call Pax?
I don't know who...
Did he call Gar?
I don't know who he called. Maybe he had Scott Layden call him or something.
Scott Layden had to have been the guy.
So they called him and said, hey, we're interested in trading for Jimmy Butler. And I would imagine if up from the Bulls end, they would say something like, okay, well, will you give us Andrew Wiggins and the number 7 pick? And then they said, no, that's too much. And that was the end of the conversation.
Any conceivable Wolves-Bulls deal you see that could make sense from both teams' end?
Well, we know the Bulls like Chris Dunn.
Chris Dunn, the number 7 pick in this draft.
5. Yeah, Chris Dunn, 7.
No, they drafted 7, right?
They're at 7 this year, but Dunn was the 5th pick last year, I thought.
I mean, Chris Dunn, first round, number 7 pick in this Thursday's draft, and then what else? Like, Chris Dunn wasn't good as a rookie. He has less value, I think, now than he did a year ago, because he proved as a rookie, he showed less as a rookie than he did more, you know?
I would ask
more reasons for concern than promise as a rookie.
Honestly, I would ask for Wiggins.
Yeah, but if they say no, then is there any other equation of youngsters and
if
athletes?
Zach LaVine wasn't coming off a torn ACL, I could be talked into LaVine, but I...
LaVine, the number 7 pick, and Chris Dunn for Jimmy Butler.
If Zach LaVine wasn't recovering from a torn ACL, but he is. So to me, then it's Wiggins or no deal. Especially if you're the Bulls, you're not going to give... I mean, you're...
I like LaVine a lot.
But he's an explosive athlete who's coming off a torn ACL.
Yeah, but he also proved late last season to be a really good three-point shooter in the second half of the season for a prolonged stretch for probably the first time, right?
Do you trust this organization with guys with knee problems?
No, but I mean, no. I don't... It seems more like a one-off for Zach. Has he had a history of injury problems before the ACL? Like, I don't think you can operate in a space as the Bulls that, like, you can't go out and ever again get a really talented player who's had one serious knee injury just because of past fear.
My problem, well, my thing with it is that if LaVine is going to be one of the centerpieces with that knee injury, the other pieces they're getting back have to be really good, and I don't think Seven and Chris Dunn is going to be enough. Okay. I think Wiggins would be enough.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's right. Because Seven's that spot in the draft where it goes from getting someone that you're really confident in being maybe a multi-year all-star to the part where you might screw that pick up. You know what I mean? Like, Malik Monk will probably be available at Seven. He sounds really fun, but he could be really hit or miss. Like, he could be a complete whiff.
Or the Markkanen kid from Arizona.
Arizona, yeah. Like, that's a guy with a lot of potential, but a lot to prove, too.
My thing with this is, like, and again, you have to consider the personality dynamic.
Yeah.
You think the Bulls, if the Bulls are trading Jimmy to Minnesota, they're not going to let Thibodeau get him without giving back, like, Wiggins and the high and the lottery pick. Like, they're not going to let Tibbs get him for a discount.
When's LaVine supposed to be back? Like, February from the knee injury? Because didn't he injure it?
He injured it in, like, January.
Okay.
Because it was before the All-Star break, because he was
I misspoke. He did have a prolonged stretch of really good three-point shooting. Like, okay, that was before the All-Star break then, obviously, if I misspoke instead of after. But,
The Bulls are
make a full recovery.
The Bulls are all about optics as a thing, and they're not going to say the centerpiece of this trade was this guy who's coming off a torn ACL. Okay. Like, they know that they can't sell that. I really just don't think, just based on the personalities and, like, if the Timberwolves were willing to trade Wiggins, that's a different discussion, but I don't think they would be.
Certainly. So, not expecting a Wolves-Bulls trade for many reasons, as we just pointed out. I think we touched on everything. A lot of hypothetical fun. A lot of real reaction there. Glad the NBA has become really wild again. This is way more fun than, like, watching the Warriors beat the Cavs by 25 points in Game 1.
Two. We disagreed on stuff in this episode. We don't usually disagree on a lot of stuff. This is
good. I know. I like to think it's because we're just both brilliant minds.
We're both geniuses.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Well, so
but
you can tell us otherwise on the podcast. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and then tell us how much of idiots we are. And the reason we agree, maybe because we're both idiots, whatever you want
to
do.
And also subscribe to The Athletic. I just want to give a shout out today. We just launched our fourth market today, Detroit.
The Athletic Detroit
with Craig Custance, a great hockey writer from ESPN.
Fresh hot Red Wings news.
Absolutely.
You need to know the team the Blackhawks will play in 2027 in the Stanley Cup Finals.
So we're in four markets now. We've got Chicago, Toronto, Detroit, and Cleveland. Make sure you're following Jason Lloyd for all this Cavs drama with David Griffin and whether they're going to trade for Paul George or Jimmy Butler. Make sure you get a subscription. You can get 30% off this week because of the new site that we're launching. Use the code LAUNCHWEEK.
And you can follow Sean on Twitter at Hyken. He'll retweet those details if you're interested in The Athletic subscription. Do give our podcast a subscription, too, please. We're on Locked On Bulls on Twitter and Facebook by its name. You can find me on Twitter at Cody Westrone. You can find my work at 670score.com. Most of all, what? Tell your friends, everything. We'll be coming out later. What? Tuesday podcast, too, probably. I'm sure there'll be plenty more Jimmy Butler rumors in the next 24 hours, so I think we'll be recording Tuesday evening next is the plan.
I think we're gonna have a lot of episodes this week just because it's draft week and there's all these trade rumors, but you can find all those episodes on iTunes and Stitcher and Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, wherever else you find podcasts. If you want to advertise with us or you have questions you want us to answer, I don't know how many questions we'll be able to get to this week because, you know, there's so much stuff going on, but in general, if you want to send us questions or you want to advertise with us, lockedonbulls@gmail.com is where to do that. And we will be back with you guys soon. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.